Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Trinadapi Sunichena Tarar Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Namaiva Kevalam Kalo Nastyeva, 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 Gatir Anyata. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We are continuing our Krishna book class here from my home, which I call Nirantara Virtual Bhajan Kutir. We are currently studying the Krishna book, which was given to us by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in the middle of chapter 87. And we're picking up at this particular point. The statements of the personified Vedas give clear evidence that the Vedic literature is presented only for understanding Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita confirms that through all the Vedas it is Krishna alone who has to be understood. Krishna is always enjoined, either in the material world or in the spiritual world. Because He is the supreme enjoyer, for Him there is no distinction between the material and spiritual worlds. The material world is an impediment for the ordinary living entities, because they are under its control. But Krishna, being the controller of the material world, has nothing to do with the impediments it offers. Therefore, in different parts of the Upanishads, the Vedas declare, the Supreme Brahman is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. That one Supreme Personality of Godhead exists in the heart of every living entity. Because of His all-pervasiveness, He is able to enter not only into the hearts of the living entities, but even into the atoms also. As the Supersoul, He is the controller of all activities of the living entities. He lives within all of them and witnesses their actions, allowing them to act according to their desires and also giving them the results of their different activities. He is the living force of all things, but He is transcendental to the material qualities. He is omnipotent. He is expert in manufacturing everything. And on account of His superior natural knowledge, He can bring everyone under His control. As such, He is everyone's master. He is sometimes manifest on the surface of the globe, but He is simultaneously within all matter. Desiring to expand himself in multi forms, he glanced over the material energy, and thus innumerable living entities became manifest. Everything is created by his superior energy, and everything in his creation appears to be perfectly done without deficiency. Those who aspire for liberation from this material world must therefore worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate cause of all causes. He is just like the total mass of earth, from which varieties of earthly pots are manufactured. The pots are made of earthly clay, they rest on earth, and after being destroyed, their elements ultimately merge back into earth. The original cause of all varieties of manifestation. Employing this analogy of Brahman with earth, the impersonalists especially stress the Vedic statement, Sarvam Kalvidang Brahma. Everything is Brahman. The impersonalists do not take into account the varieties of manifestation emanating from the supreme cause, Brahman. They simply consider that everything emanates from Brahman and after destruction merges into Brahman, and that the intermediate stage of manifestation is also Brahman. But although the Maya bodies believe that prior to its manifestation, the cosmos was in Brahman, after creation it remains in Brahman, and after destruction it merges into Brahman, they do not know what Brahman is. The Brahma Samhita, however, clearly describes Brahman. The living entities, space, time, and the material elements, like fire, earth, sky, water, and mind, constitute the total cosmic manifestation known as Bhu, Bhuva, Sva, which is all manifested by Govinda. It flourishes on the strength of Govinda, and after annihilation enters into and is conserved in Govinda. Lord Brahma therefore says, I worship Lord Govinda, the original personality, the cause of all causes. The word Brahman indicates the greatest of all and the maintainer of everything. The impersonalists are attracted by the greatness of the sky. But because of their poor fund of knowledge, they are not attracted by the greatness of Krishna. In our practical life, however, we are attracted by the greatness of a person and not by the greatness of a big mountain. Thus the term Brahman actually applies to Krishna only. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna concluded that Lord Krishna is Para-Brahman, or the supreme resting place of everything. Krishna is the supreme Brahman because of his unlimited knowledge, unlimited potencies, unlimited strength, unlimited influence, unlimited beauty, and unlimited renunciation. Ultimately, therefore, the word Brahman can be applied to Krishna only. Arjuna affirms that because the impersonal Brahman is the effulgence emanating as rays of Krishna's transcendental body, Krishna is the Para-Brahman. Everything rests on Brahman, but Brahman itself rests on Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the ultimate Brahman or Para-Brahman. The material elements are accepted as the inferior energy of Krishna. By their interaction, the cosmic manifestation takes place, rests on Krishna, and after dissolution, again enters into the body of Krishna as his subtle energy. Krishna is therefore the cause of both manifestation and dissolution. Sarvankalvidang Brahma means that everything is Lord Krishna in the sense that everything is his energy. That is the vision of the Mahabhagavats. They see everything in relation to Krishna. The impersonalists argue that Krishna himself has been transformed into many, and that therefore everything is Krishna, and worship of anything is worship of him. This false argument is answered by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Although everything is a transformation of the energy of Krishna, he is not present everywhere. He is simultaneously present and not present. By his energy, he is present everywhere. But as the energetic, he is not present everywhere. This simultaneous presence and non-presence is inconceivable to our present senses. But a clear explanation is given in the beginning of the Ishopanishad, in which it is stated that the Supreme Lord is so complete that although unlimited energies and their transformations emanate from Krishna, Krishna's personality is not in the least bit transformed. Therefore, since Krishna is the cause of all causes, intelligent persons should take shelter of his lotus feet. Krishna advises everyone just to surrender unto him alone, and that is the way of Vedic instruction. Since Krishna is the cause of all causes, he is worshipped by all kinds of sages and saints through observance of the regulative principles. As far as meditation is concerned, great personalities meditate on the transcendental form of Krishna within the heart. In this way, the minds of great personalities are always engaged in Krishna. With their minds engaged in Krishna, naturally the captivated devotees simply talk of Krishna. Talking of Krishna or singing of Krishna is called kirtan. Lord Chaitanya recommends, kirtaniya sada hari, which means always thinking and talking of Krishna and nothing else. That is called Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is so sublime that anyone who takes to this process is elevated to the highest perfection of life, far, far beyond the concept of liberation. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, Krishna advises everyone always to think of Him, render devotional service to Him, worship Him, and offer obeisances to Him. In this way, a devotee becomes fully Krishna-ized, and being always situated in Krishna consciousness, ultimately goes back to Krishna. Although the Vedas have recommended worship of different demigods as different parts and parcels of Krishna, it is to be understood that such instructions are meant for less intelligent men who are still attracted by material sense enjoyment. But the person who actually wants perfect fulfillment of the mission of human life should simply worship Lord Krishna, and that will simplify the matter and completely guarantee the success of human life. Although the sky, the water, and the land are all part of the material world, when one stands on the solid land, his position is more secure than when he stands in the sky or on the water. An intelligent person, therefore, does not stand under the protection of different demigods, although they are part and parcel of Krishna. Rather, he stands on the solid ground of Krishna consciousness. That makes his position sound and secure. Impersonalists sometimes give the example that if one stands on a stone or a piece of wood, one certainly stands on the surface of the land, because the stone and wood both rest on the surface of the earth. But it may be replied that if one stands directly on the surface of the earth, one is more secure than if he stands on wood or stone that rests on the earth. In other words, taking shelter of Paramatma or taking shelter of impersonal Brahman is not as secure a course as taking direct shelter of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. The position of the jnanis and yogis is therefore not as secure as the position of the devotees of Krishna. Lord Krishna has therefore advised in the Bhagavad Gita that only a person who has lost his sense takes to the worship of demigods. And regarding persons attached to impersonal Brahman, Srimad Bhagavatam says, "My dear Lord, those who think of themselves as liberated by mental speculation are not yet purified of the contamination of material nature because of their inability to find the shelter of your lotus feet. Although they rise to the transcendental situation of existence in impersonal Brahman, they certainly fall from that exalted position because they deride your lotus feet." Lord Krishna therefore advises that the worshippers of the demigods are not very intelligent persons because they derive only temporary, exhaustible results. Their endeavors are those of less intelligent men. On the other hand, the Lord assures that His devotee has no fear of falling. The personified Vedas then continued to pray. Dear Lord, considering all points of view, if a person has to worship someone superior to him or herself, then just out of good behavior, one should stick to the worship of your lotus feet, because you are the ultimate controller of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. You are the controller of the three worlds, Bhu, Bhuva, Sva. You are the controller of the 14 upper and lower worlds, and you are the controller of the three material qualities. Demigods and persons advanced in spiritual knowledge always hear and chant about your transcendental pastimes, because this process has the specific potency of nullifying the accumulated results of sinful life. Intelligent persons factually dip into the ocean of your nectarian activities and very patiently hear about them. Thus, they are immediately freed from the contamination of the material qualities. They do not have to undergo severe penances in austerities for advancement in spiritual life. This chanting and hearing of your transcendental pastimes is the easiest process for self-realization. Simply by submissive oral reception of the transcendental message, one's heart is cleansed of all dirty things. Thus, Krishna consciousness becomes fixed in the heart of the devotee. The great authority, Bhishma Deva, has also given the opinion that this process of chanting and hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the highest religious process. And the Taittiriya Upanishad says that worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the essence of all Vedic ritualistic performances. The personified Vedas continued. Dear Lord, the devotee who wants to elevate him or herself simply by the process of devotional activities, especially by hearing and chanting, very soon comes out of the clutches of the dualities of material existence. By this simple process of penance and austerity, the super soul within the devotee's heart is very much pleased and gives the devotee directions so that he may go back home, back to Godhead. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that one who engages all his or her activities and senses in the devotional service of the Lord becomes completely peaceful because the super soul is satisfied with him or her. Thus, the devotee becomes transcendental to all dualities, such as heat and cold, honor and dishonor. Being freed from all dualities, one feels transcendental bliss, and he or she no longer suffers cares and anxieties due to material existence. The Bhagavad Gita confirms that the devotee, always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, has no anxiety for one's maintenance or protection. Being constantly absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he or she ultimately achieves the highest perfection. While in material existence, one lives very peacefully and blissfully, without cares and anxieties. And after quitting this body, he or she goes back home, back to Godhead. The Lord confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, "My supreme abode is a transcendental place from which, having gone, one never returns to this material world." Anyone who attains the supreme perfection, being engaged in Krishna's personal devotional service in his eternal abode, reaches the highest perfection of human life and does not have to come back to this material world. Personified Vedas continued. "Dear Lord, it is imperative that the living entities be engaged in Krishna consciousness, always rendering devotional service by such prescribed methods as hearing and chanting and executing your orders. If a person is not engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, it is useless for him or her to exhibit the symptoms of life. Generally, if a person is breathing, he is accepted to be alive. But a person without Krishna consciousness may be compared to a bellows in a blacksmith shop. The big bellows is a bag of skin which exhales and inhales air, and the human being who simply lives within the bag of skin and bones without taking to Krishna consciousness and loving devotional service is no better than the bellows. Similarly, a non-devotee's long duration of life is compared to the long existence of a tree. One's voracious eating capacity is compared to the eating of the dogs and hogs, and one's enjoyment in sex life is compared to that of hogs and goats. The cosmic manifestation has been made possible because of the entrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Mahavishnu within this material world. The total material energy is agitated by the glance of Mahavishnu, and only then does the interaction of the three material qualities begin. Therefore, it should be concluded that whatever material facilities we are trying to enjoy are available only due to the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Within the body, there are five different departments of existence, known as Annamay, Pranamay, Manomay, Vijnanamay, and at last Anandamay. In the beginning of life, every living entity is food conscious. A child or an animal is satisfied only by getting nice food. This stage of consciousness in which the goal is to eat sumptuously, is called anna-mai. Anna means food. After this, one lives in the consciousness of being alive. If one can continue one's life without being attacked or destroyed, one thinks him or herself happy. This stage is called pranamaya, or consciousness of one's existence. After this stage, when one is situated on the mental platform, one's consciousness is called manomai. The materialistic civilization is primarily situated in these three stages: anamai, pranamai, and manomai. The first concern of a civilized person is economic development. The next concern is defense against being annihilated. And the next consciousness is mental speculation, or the philosophical approach to the values of life. If by the evolutionary process of philosophical life, one happens to reach the platform of intellectual life and understands that he or she is not this material body, but a spiritual soul, one is situated in the Vijnanamaya stage. Then, by evolution in spiritual life, he or she comes to the understanding of the Supreme Lord or the Supreme Soul. When one develops his or her relationship with the Supreme Lord or Supreme Soul and executes devotional service, that stage of life is called Krishna consciousness, the Anandamaya stage. Anandamaya is the blissful life of knowledge and eternity. As it is stated in the Vedanta Sutra, Ananda Mayo Vyasat. The Supreme Brahman and the subordinate Brahman, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the living entities are both joyful by nature. As long as the living entities are situated in the lower four stages of life, Anamai, Pranamai, Manomai, and Vijnanamai, they are considered to be in the material condition of life. But as soon as one reaches the stage of Anandamai, he or she is a liberated soul. This Anandamai stage is explained in the Bhagavad Gita as Brahma Bhuta. There it is said that in the Brahma Bhuta stage of life, there is no anxiety and no hankering. This stage begins when one is equally disposed toward all living entities, and then it expands to the stage of Krishna consciousness, in which one always hankers to render service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This hankering for advancement in devotional service is not the same as hankering for sense gratification in material existence. In other words, hankering remains in spiritual life, but it becomes purified. Similarly, when our senses are purified, they are freed from all material stages, namely anamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, and vijnanamaya, and they become situated in the highest stage, anandamaya, or blissful life in Krishna consciousness. The Mayavadi philosophers consider Anandamai to be the state of being merged in the Supreme. To them, Anandamay means that the Supersoul and the individual soul become one. But the real fact is that oneness does not mean merging into the Supreme and losing one's own individual existence. Merging into the spiritual existence is the living entity's realization of qualitative oneness with the Supreme Lord in His aspects of eternity and knowledge. But the actual Anandamay, blissful stage, is attained when one is engaged in devotional service. That is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Mad bhaktiṃ labhate param. Here, Lord Krishna states that the Brahma Bhuta Anandamaya stage is complete only when there is an exchange of love between the Supreme and the subordinate living entities. Unless one comes to this Anandamaya stage, his breathing is like the breathing of a bellows in a black ship chop. His duration of life is like that of a tree, and he or she is no better than the lower animals like the camels, hogs, and dogs. Undoubtedly, the eternal living entity cannot be annihilated at any point. But the lower species of life exist in a miserable condition, whereas one who is engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord is situated in the pleasurable or Anandamaya status of life. The different stages described above are all in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although in all circumstances there exist both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities, the difference is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead always exists in the Anandamaya stage, whereas the subordinate living entities, because of their minute position as fragmental portions of the Supreme Lord, are prone to fall to the other stages of life. Although in all the stages, both the Supreme Lord and the living entities exist, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always transcendental to our concept of life, whether we are in bondage or in liberation. The whole cosmic manifestation becomes possible by the grace of the Supreme Lord. It exists by the grace of the Supreme Lord, and when annihilated, it merges into the existence of the Supreme Lord. As such, the Supreme Lord, who is the supreme existence, who is the cause of all causes. Therefore, the conclusion is that without development of Krishna consciousness, one's life is simply a waste of time. For those who are very materialistic and who cannot understand the situation of the spiritual world, the abode of Krishna, great sages have recommended the yogic process whereby one gradually rises from meditation on the abdomen, which is called Muladhara or Manipuraka meditation. Muladhara and Manipuraka are technical terms which refer to the intestines within the abdomen. Grossly materialistic persons think that economic development is of foremost importance because they are under the impression that a living entity exists only by eating. Such grossly materialistic persons forget that although we may eat as much as we like, if the food is not digested, it produces the troubles of indigestion and acidity. Therefore, eating is not in itself the cause of the vital energy of life. Food digestion of eatables. For digestion of eatables, we have to take shelter of another superior energy, which is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita as Vaishvanara. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he helps the digestion in the form of Vaishvanara. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-pervasive. Therefore, his presence in the stomach as Vaishvanara is not extraordinary. Krishna is actually present everywhere. The Vaishnava, therefore, marks his body with temples of Vishnu. He first marks a tilak temple on the abdomen, then on the chest, then between the collarbones, then on the forehead, and gradually he marks the top of the head, the Brahma Rantra. The 13 temples of tilak marked on the body of a Vaishnava are known as follows. On the forehead is the temple of Lord Keshava. On the belly is the temple of Lord Narayana. On the chest is the temple of Lord Madhava. And on the throat, between the two collarbones, is the temple of Lord Govinda. On the right side of the waist is the temple of Vishnu. On the right arm, the temple of Lord Madhusudan. And on the right side of the collarbone, the temple of Lord Trivikrama. Similarly, on the left side of the waist is the temple of Lord Vamanadeva. On the left arm, the temple of Sridhar. On the left side of the collarbone, the temple of Hrishikesha. On the upper back, the temple called Padmanabha. And on the lower back, the temple called Damodara. On the top of the head is the temple called Vasudeva. This is the process of meditation of the Lord's situation in the different parts of the body. But for those who are not Vaishnavas, great sages recommend meditation on the bodily concept of life, meditation on the intestines, on the heart, on the throat, on the eyebrows, on the forehead, and then on the top of the head. Some of the sages, in the disciplic succession from the great saint Aruna, meditate on the heart because the supersoul stays within the heart along with the living entity. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter, wherein the Lord states, "I am situated in everyone's heart." As a part of devotional service, Vaishnavas protect the body for the service of the Lord. But those who are gross materialists accept the body as the self. They worship the body, by the yogic process of meditation on different bodily parts, such as Manipuraka, Dahara, and Hridaya, gradually rising to the Brahmarandhra on the top of the head. The first class yogi who has attained perfection in the practice of the yoga system ultimately passes through the Brahmarandhra to any one of the planets in either the material or spiritual worlds. How a yogi can transfer him or herself to another planet is vividly described in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In this regard, Shukadeva Goswami has recommended that the beginners worship the Virat Purusha, the gigantic universal form of the Lord. One who cannot believe that the Lord can be worshipped with equal success in the deity or archa form, or who cannot concentrate on this form, is advised to worship the universal form of the Lord. The lower part of the universe is considered the feet and legs of the Lord's universal form. The middle part of the universe is considered the navel or abdomen of the Lord. The upper planetary systems, such as Janaloka and Maharloka, are the heart of the Lord. And the topmost planetary system, Brahmaloka, is considered the top of the Lord's head. There are different processes recommended by great sages according to the position of the worshipper. But the ultimate aim of all meditational yogic processes is to go back home, back to Godhead. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who reaches the highest planet, the abode of Krishna, or even the Vaikuntha planets, never has to come down again to this miserable material condition of life. The Vedic recommendation, therefore, is that one make the lotus feet of Vishnu the target of all one's efforts. Tad Vishno Paramang Padam. The Vishnu planets, or Vishnu Loka, are situated above all the material planets. These Vaikuntha planets are known as Sanatan Dham, and they are eternal. They are never annihilated, not even by the annihilation of this material world. The conclusion is that if a human being does not fulfill the mission of life by worshiping the Supreme Lord and does not go back home, back to Godhead, it is to be understood that he or she is breathing just like a blacksmith's bellows, living just like a tree, eating just like a camel, and having sex just like the dogs and hogs. Thus, he or she has been frustrated in fulfilling the specific purpose of human life.